The island's leading nature conservation charity published a statement this week for members and the public regarding the Morvannon offshore wind farm examination process, highlighting the work they've been doing behind the scenes. The Manx Wildlife Trust says it's been working extensively to analyse the proposal and participate in the examination process on behalf of Manx Wildlife. Now, what's interesting in its statement is that the charity is very careful to be crystal clear on one key point. It's not approaching this process as a simple question of being for or against the proposed development, but rather it's trying to take a balanced look. Indeed, it says it supports the need for renewable energy and recognises the urgency to act on climate change. However, it's concerned that the impacts of this proposal on wildlife populations in the Isle of Man have likely been understated. I went out to the charity's offices based in Peel to speak to the chief executive, Graham Makepeace-Warne, and head of conservation and land, David Bellamy.
I suppose at the very top, if no one's read the whole thing, could you kind of summarise it for me first, I suppose, Graham?
Yeah, clearly this is an important issue. It's a massive project for the island, and there's clearly a lot of very strong opinions out there. And at Manx Wildlife Trust, we were starting to get frustrated at the amount of misinformation, accusations of not having done anything, when in reality we were putting a huge amount of work, a huge amount of resourcing into making representations at the examination. So we wanted to put a statement out to try and address some of those things. And importantly, we wanted to make the point that there is no point in us as an organisation coming out for or against this project at the current time. Our best strength, if you like, is to work through the examination process, and that's exactly what David and his team have been doing. So we wanted to put a statement out explaining the level of work that we'd done and what our findings were. But to reiterate, it doesn't say that Manx Wildlife Trust are either for or against this as a project. We see the need for and support the idea of renewable energy, but we want to make sure that wildlife and wildlife's needs are heard in that process.
I suppose that in reading it as well, the thing that jumped out to me, like you say, rather than it being for or against, is actually more of a discussion around the ecological surveys and how it's all, the assessments are undertaken and the comparison between the island and elsewhere, and sort of bringing it down to a Manx level. I suppose in you bringing those representations to the meetings with Ørsted and the public meetings and everything you've had to do, it does say as well you've gone through over 10,000 pages of the applicant's environmental impact assessments. You've got all these documents attached that you've been working through and have had to present. All this work unfunded. Could you also just, I suppose, give me an insight then, David, into all the work that's being done behind the scenes then as well?
Thank you. As you said, the initial application is about 10,000 pages long, and since then, during the examination, many thousands of more pages of material have come to light. The actual contents page for the MEMA website runs to over 46 A4 pages, just listing all the documents that we've had to go through. Certainly, we're a very small non-government organisation, so we're not really best geared for this, but one of the reasons we're undertaking the work is we recognise that the Isle of Man government is in exactly the same place. If this application was in the UK, for example, there would be a very large civil service of people, experts in wind farms and the potential effects to support an examination. So we are looking to support the Manx nation, really, to make sure that all due process and scrutiny is followed.
So then jumping on the ecological concerns then, you say in this letter that several of the baseline ecological assessments are inadequate. Could you give me a sort of understanding of why then?
I guess that really stems down to the process. So at sea, the marine consenting process is different from land. I guess in layman's terms, what the applicant is doing at this stage is applying for almost approval in principle. And what they're saying is that if consented at this stage, they will then go and do further work to really understand, for example, the seabed situation out there. Whereas what we're more accustomed to is all the surveys coming up front, so we really know what we're dealing with. So that kind of, we've got a bit of a chicken and egg scenario. And in terms of that seabed situation, or the benthic assessment, as it's called, there's various gaps in our knowledge at this stage, so we still don't really understand what inhabits the seabed, and then the fish and shellfish and other marine animals that are found in that area. So makes it very, very difficult to actually fully understand what the potential impacts of this proposal.
Some of the statistics that the charity point out in their statement are quite shocking reading. It says that the Manx ecological impacts have to date been understated by the applicant. By way of an example, the applicant's annual expected number of bird deaths is 660 individual birds each year, including the modelled deaths of 466 auks. That's the seabird group, which includes locally amber-listed guillemot, red-listed razorbill and red-listed puffin. In a Manx context, for guillemot, the modelled 309 annual deaths represent around 21% of the known Manx overwintering population. For razorbill, the modelled 149.5 annual deaths is actually significantly greater than the entire Manx overwintering population. The charity says, "We therefore do not agree that such mortality can be insignificant in a Manx context." Here's David Bellamy again.
They're not small numbers, and I think that will actually shock people. Like, when I read that, I was sort of taken aback by it. Are you simply just trying to sort of give a voice then to these concerns and laying out the statistics in a way that you feel maybe isn't being picked up by these assessments in the way that they work? Whoever wants to take that.
Thank you. So I guess it's important to know that these figures are the applicant's figures from their own modelling. We don't have in-house expertise to do our own modelling in this area, so we're taking the applicant's figures at face value. To be fair to the applicant, all of this is above board. It's all in the public domain, but of course it is buried in those 10,000 pages that we talked about before. So by going through this, we're wanting to pick out these impacts. And something that this has highlighted, especially in using seabirds as an example, is what the applicant is saying is that these significance, the 660 expected bird deaths per year, is insignificant. And they've come to that assessment by using what's called biogeographical ranges. And sometimes that's, you know, at the scale of the western side of the British Isles, for example. What we're saying is when we start to look at those same figures but reference them to the Manx population, that these really are quite significant. And that significance is important, because under established environmental impact assessment protocols, if something is insignificant, you don't have to mitigate it. What we're saying is on the Isle of Man, we think these figures are significant and need to be mitigated. And actually, Manx policy is different to in the UK. And we've got three different areas of policy and legislation on the Isle of Man that say all adverse impacts have to be mitigated, whether they're significant or insignificant at all.
And I'm not expecting you to have the solution to this, because you're not the applicant or the company that want to build the wind farm. However, when you say mitigation in place, what would be a suitable mitigation? If you give me like an example of how that would work.
So it depends on each species and each group of wildlife that you're talking about, but changing the lowest wingtip height, for example, on the blades, changing the size, orientation and positioning of the overall wind farm, all of these things will have an effect.
And we sort of talked a little bit about this off mic before we started, but just to sort of explain another thing in here is the difference really between a standard, I suppose, quote unquote, standard planning application on land versus something like this, which would be in the sea, because we're speaking specifically about the offshore wind farm proposal here. Could you give me a little bit of like understanding into how that sort of that process does differ?
On land, when you apply for planning permission under the Town and Country Planning Act, for example, you have to submit drawings accurate to within 1 millimetre. What we're seeing in the MIMA, which is the Marine Infrastructure Management Act, which governs all consenting at sea, is proposals that are in some terms looser. For example, the exact siting of the wind turbine generators themselves can move on even on the day of erection, depending on the local situation that the construction team would find. So and also a big thing is within the what's called at this stage the draft marine infrastructure consent, there's a whole plethora of effectively conditions that the applicant would have to meet even if it is approved. So I guess there's potential that many of our concerns could still be addressed after consent through the conditions. But overall, it's a very complex situation. And also, it's worth pointing out that this is the first time this legislation has been tried on the Isle of Man. So we're learning, as the Isle of Man government is and as everyone is, during this process.
And I think, sort of just to jump back to you, Graham, for a second, I mean, we're talking again about the ecological impact there, say, for example, of the seabirds there. Like you say, a lot of people might read that and go, well, the Manx Wildlife Trust is against this then because of this. But actually, is it, you know, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but you're essentially saying we want to point out that these are the impacts. We want them to be mitigated or at least looked at. But, you know, we're not against it, but this needs to all be taken into consideration is essentially what's happening behind the scenes then.
Yeah, absolutely. Manx Wildlife Trust is not, as an organisation, automatically against development. You know, we all live in properties, we all drive cars. These things need to happen, and no development happens without any impact on wildlife. There are systems in place elsewhere in the UK, like Biodiversity Net Gain, where the law is put in place to require mitigation against effects or loss of biodiversity with any development. We don't currently have Biodiversity Net Gain actually actively used in the Isle of Man yet. And this is something that we would like to see, because that would make things like this a lot easier to handle. We're having to look at this project on its own, and we're looking for mitigation to happen where those impacts are likely to be.
And so for the charity then going forward, what happens next? You keep making representations, you keep, you know, reading thousands of pages of documents. Where are we going from here then? What's the next stage?
So the final part that Manx Wildlife Trust will have in this process is we'll be represented at any further hearings that might take place, although none are currently scheduled. And the final document we'll be submitting is what's called a statement of common ground between ourselves and the applicant, to highlight areas of agreement and disagreement, and areas that there may be disagreement, but they're not material to the application. So we'll be doing that towards the end of August, which will be in the public sphere, and which we'll place on our website. And thereafter, the examination closes on the 9th of September, which is 130 days since it began, and this is all in law, the timetable, so it's a very, very tight examination window. And thereafter, the examining body have got 60 days to make a recommendation to the Council of Ministers, and once that's made, Comin have got 30 days to make that final decision, so we'll know this side of Christmas.
The timing of this is interesting, because it's a completely new crop of politicians. When you're putting in hours and hours and hours of work like you are doing, where does that leave you in terms of feeling like, well, we're going to have a whole load of new MHKs that come in? That, I mean, on day one, they might just say, no, we're not doing it. And then do you feel like any of this is time wasted, or is it just the value of defending the wildlife in the way that you're doing?
No, nothing like this could ever be time wasted, because our job is to speak up for wildlife, which of course doesn't have its own voice. So in this democratic process, we take the voice of those who can't be heard. And I think that's always going to be a valuable thing to do.
Well, what does the company behind the Morvannon offshore wind farm make of this statement? I put it to them, and their response is voiced here by Lewis Foster.
Our environmental surveys and impact assessment methods follow internationally recognised standards and were developed through extensive consultation with Manx statutory and tertiary stakeholders. They have also been scrutinised throughout the examination. Manx Wildlife Trust has been engaged at all stages of the project development and have had multiple opportunities to comment on both the scope of the surveys and the assessment methodology. No alternative assessment approach has been proposed by Manx Wildlife Trust or other stakeholders. During the examination, we have provided extensive clarification on what we mean by the term uniquely Manx. It means applying robust, internationally recognised best practice while reflecting the island's specific environmental conditions, which is exactly what we've done. We understand that the examining body is satisfied with those explanations, having no further questions in relation to the term. In relation to the potential effects upon features of ornithological interest, our assessment concluded there are no likely significant effects requiring mitigation, and that conclusion has been supported by the evidence presented throughout the examination.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.